Welcome to Church in the North, a podcast by ministry leaders and for ministry leaders. I'm your host, Rob Chartrand, Program Coordinator for Christian Ministry at Briarcrest College. And I'm joined by my co-host, Jeff Dresser, Assistant Professor of Worship Arts. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, Rob.
And guest co-host, Caitlin Brennan, Director of Youthquake. Good morning, Caitlin.
Good morning, guys.
Well, guys, you know what today is, huh? Today, the day we're recording, today is it's February 14th. What's happening on February 14th?
Ash Wednesday.
Yes, you are correct. It is Ash Wednesday. It's also...
Second best answer, Valentine's Day.
Yeah, all right. Well, what do we want to talk about first? Let's talk about Ash Wednesday, and then we're going to get back to Valentine's Day, because we're going to talk a lot about Valentine's Day. So, Ash Wednesday, you guys giving up anything for Lent? Got any plans?
Anything? I probably should. Hmm? To be honest, I haven't thought about it.
If you could, what would you give up?
Well, to be honest, I mean, this is probably the most cliche answer, but I probably should literally just throw away my phone. I feel like, I don't know what, I've been kind of sick the last little bit, and I feel like when I'm like that, you know, watch movies, just kind of lounge, and I just find more and more I'm on my phone.
You're doom scrolling?
Yeah, very much so. Mm. And yeah, I think when all of a sudden you're like, where did the time go? That's when it's bad. So.
Right. And what was that movie I just watched?
Yeah, that too. Well, and this is really bad when you are watching a movie and you feel the need to scroll even as you're watching, like you can't even be entertained by one
media.
Yeah, anymore. It's so bad.
Yeah.
That's, you know what? This is my accountability, this podcast.
All right.
Everyone can check in.
All right. So are you declaring?
I guess I'm declaring, yes.
You giving up double screening for Lent?
Yeah.
Or just your phone?
That's
you're
going to
throw
one.
Your phone in the garbage?
Well, I don't know if I could throw my phone in the garbage. The school pays for it. But yeah.
How'd you get the school to pay for your phone?
Wait a minute.
Wait, hold on.
What?
Okay. Yeah, right. Okay, I guess we won't talk about that.
All right, turning the page.
Double screens.
But you have some good news today.
I do have some good. That's probably why the most.
That's probably why you need your phone.
I need my phone.
Is because you need to keep up on this trend.
Yeah, we're gearing up for Youthquake. And today, what a glorious morning. We sold out for registrations for senior high.
Yes, and there was great rejoicing and weeping and gnashing of teeth.
For those that didn't get in, yes.
For those slacker youth pastors who did not...
Rob said it, not me.
...manage their administrative lives and get the things in time, and now their youth group kids are upset.
Yeah. Well, they're going to be after. Yeah. I don't know how many youth are listening to this, but when they find out later today. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I made this mistake in my youth ministry journey many, many years ago. I did not provide the right advertising in the right amount of time in the church bulletins back in the day when we had church bulletins and there was no online. And I had some very upset parents because my baby can't go to your retreat because you didn't get the information out in time. So yeah. I feel it. But yeah, that's too bad.
You only learn that lesson once. We had youth pastors who the same situation happened to last year that were just devastated. They told their kids. They even had all their kids' information, but they just didn't, you know, get it on our site in time. And I was in Calgary at YWC, and a youth pastor came up to me and he said, I'm not letting that happen again. And he signed up all of his kids on day one.
Wow.
Yeah, pre-registered them all. And so, you know, once you learn.
Yeah. Yeah. Who says pain is not a great motivator? It is a tremendous motivator.
Exactly.
Jeff, are you giving anything up for Lent?
I think I need to give up Reels.
Okay.
Because I get scrolling on
Doom scrolling.
I thought you had a timer on that.
And well, I do. So here's like when I had Facebook like
those
right off my phone.
Those timers do not work.
No, I was good with the timer. But then when I released our EP, I put Facebook back on I was
plug
promoting
for the EP.
It. Yeah. And so
what's it called?
It's called Awaken. Pro and Jeff Dresser
available on Spotify.
Where fine music is streamed. Yep. So I need to take Facebook off because it's just terrible. And the time, I mean, it just soaks up the time and then I feel horrible after.
Wow. You use Facebook?
Thank you. I was going to say,
that?
I feel like I've only heard like Reels, Instagram, TikTok.
Well,
no,
well
now, like I knew enough to know that TikTok.
Those are just Facebook videos.
TikTok would be the end of me. But now the TikTokers are all putting their Reels on
Yeah, they're doubling
Facebook.
Down for sure.
Yeah.
So. You want anyway. You want the whole market, not just part of the market.
Exactly.
Right? In case TikTok gets canceled or something like that.
There yeah. we go.
Yeah. Well, I'm not giving up anything for Lent. I'm giving
pressures
up,
us into I'm admitting up, what yeah, we're giving up, and then
I'm giving up romance for Lent. So I just
has Karen agreed to this
for Valentine's Day? I've done nothing, so I'm giving up romance for Lent. So that's a I think it's a good kind of catch-all for, reason for doing it.
Yeah, no, I think I've a. I have something because I think it's a special day that Valentine's Day and Ash Wednesday are together. So what do you guys think of this? This is what I'm going to put in my card. Roses are red. It's a sin to lust. Happy Valentine's Day. Remember you are dust.
You're going to give that to your wife?
Did you just come up with that?
No, I've been working on it for a while. Okay. So.
Yeah. Is this what we can expect on your EP for song lyrics? Yeah,
there we go. Little taste of the next single.
You're going to put a little ashen cross in the inside of the card, too?
Well, that would be, I mean, you got to write, you know, you write for the holidays, worship songs. You know, if you can write a Christmas song or an Easter song, that's a good thing. So writing for the confluence of Ash Wednesday and Valentine's Day, that's pretty niche.
Right.
But, I might have that market to myself.
That's right. I always thought like doing a Christmas movie or a Christmas album is like the last ditch effort of a failing artist or actor.
Mm. It's the duo albums that mean that the artist can no longer carry something on their own. So they do collaborations.
Okay.
So
that's
usually the death knell of a once popular artist.
Wow.
So are you guys doing anything for Valentine's Day special? You got any plans? Or do you normally do? Like, is that like a thing in your household or in your relationship? I mean, you guys are more newly married.
Yeah. Kate,
so you're still maybe making traditions, but.
Yeah. Well, and my husband would say he doesn't believe in traditions. He doesn't like having reoccurring plans.
Okay.
So yesterday I said, what are we doing tomorrow? And he said, well, I don't know. Like, I have soccer. And I said, okay, I guess I'll watch you play soccer. But then I did say, I was like, I would like us to do something. And then he started listing off ideas. I said, no, and I want it to be a surprise. Oh. So it'll probably just be he makes dinner and we'll see what else. But we're watching, I'm watching him play soccer. So
I was going to say, he makes dinner and brings it to the sidelines of soccer.
So. Yeah, exactly. But no, we don't usually do anything.
You don't go out?
No.
Okay. I find it hard to go out on Valentine's Day because it's really hard to get a spot and there's a whole bunch of other people out there. And so
kind of like Youthquake. You got to think ahead.
Yeah. That's right. Well, and yeah, I don't know. I'm a bit of a curmudgeon in that sense. It's like,
no,
it's
you?
Just, and why would
you
I?
You just gave up romance.
How would your wife tell?
Why do I need to practice a special day to have romance with my wife? I mean, I could take her out any day and do that. Why does it have to be on February 14th?
This sounds like, I've heard this before. Well, Jeff, I feel like you're different, Jeff.
I think Pearl wants you to do something.
Jeff and Pearl are different.
Do you guys put a video together and have a board meeting?
The specifications have been laid out very clearly. So. We have reservations at a...
Reservations, Rob. Crazy new thing.
I called for the reservations.
You can get reservations in Moose Jaw?
Well, so I called and
on February 14th.
Reservation for the 14th. Yeah, okay, what time? And I said, like, 7. And this was not, like, this was, I think, Saturday I called. So not like, okay, what's your name? And then I gave my first name. And then that was, okay, thank you. And then that was it. So... I'm a little worried, and that some other dude named Jeff doesn't show up and say, "Yeah, I got a reservation." But
I'm sure in Moose Jaw, if it's Moose Jaw, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping.
Yeah. Okay.
But
so, are you going to the new Wendy's? Is that where you guys are booked?
There's a
Wendy's in Moose Jaw.
They don't take reservations.
That was just the spot in the drive-thru. Actually, that wasn't for a table.
I heard the drive-thru.
I'm not
going
to say what restaurant
long.
It is because if they want me to name them, they got to pay some sponsorship.
Whoa, there we go.
Fair enough.
Yes, I have heard the Wendy's.
I need to get them to pay for my phone.
Oh my! I haven't gone to the new Wendy's, but I've driven past the. Lineup in the drive-through, and it has been quite long every time, and I have no desire to wait or even really eat there. I don't know why everyone at Moose Jaw was so excited about it.
I just imagine our listeners say in Toronto or Vancouver, it's like, you guys are stoked over a Wendy's. Listen, in Moose Jaw, absolutely. Wendy's is a big deal. Any new restaurant in Moose Jaw is a big deal. Does your guys' church do anything on Valentine's Day, or have you been in a church that does a special Valentine's Day event for couples? Or
I haven't been a part of a church, but I went to an event once.
Wait, what?
No, sorry. Rewind. I haven't been a part of a church that has done anything on Valentine's Day. Okay. My current church doesn't. But I went to a Valentine's event. It was, yeah, a couple's night or something at a church in Moose Jaw a couple years ago. Actually, I went when Matt and I were just dating, and then they denied us playing some of the games because we weren't married. Oh. And we just wanted to win all the prizes. And it was, I was really upset about it because I'm super competitive. And then they were like, oh, you're not even married. And then so they didn't. So we just had to watch all these other couples play these games. And we practiced. Like, we were like quizzing each other on like all these like common questions.
What kind of games were they?
Okay. It was like, well, okay, it was like the
only
new...
in the confines of marriage can such a game be played publicly.
After the recording, I need to know the name of this church.
Okay.
Jeff, what about you?
I mean, I've been at churches where we've done something around Valentine's Day or done a relationships sermon series around Valentine's Day. But it is, I mean, as you experienced, it's putting people into categories and groups, right? And like, yeah, you're in or you're out. And it has to be done with a lot of thought about how different people are going to experience that.
Right,
so
right.
The people who are in healthy relationships, hey, this is great. People who are in relationships that are not going great.
Right. Yeah.
Not going to be good. People who wish they were in a relationship. I mean, it is, I mean, it has to be done carefully. But also, I mean, we can't just ignore relationships and ignore marriages. I mean, there's such a huge, important part.
I certainly want to support that.
Yeah. So
I think God might support marriage.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty big deal for him. Yeah. Image of Christ in the church and all of that. So, yeah, I have been in a church, actually pastored in a church, and we did have one, and it was like a date night, like, and you could come to the church and there'd be private tables set up and you could have a date night with your spouse. And, you know, the food's catered and people bring it to your table, and we had the young people serving and all that. But I thought, for me, if I was, I know we did it and people found it very meaningful. For me, it'd be really weird because I'd like have all these other people that I know that are really good friends just at a table beside me. And I'm supposed to have an intimate time with my spouse. And, you know, there's like prepared questions and things like that. And I just, I don't know. I could do it any other night.
I think Pearl's going to have to chat with Rob here and, you know, or maybe just Karen and console her for the lack of romance.
Yeah. Well, we were in semi-agreement about like not going out tonight. And
semi-agreement. That's good enough for you.
That means they were disagreeing.
No.
If I'm in semi-agreement, that equals disagreement in my house. So,
like, no, I mean, I think we were both like, do you want to go out tomorrow night? No, I don't know. So we were both on the same page all the way through the discussion. And we were almost agreeing maybe we should do it. And then we said no. But she was happy for me to just buy her a Kit Kat bar because she loves Kit Kat bars. And so I bought her a Kit Kat bar.
Holy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we'll go out some other time.
On like the 15th.
Tomorrow or the day after. Yeah, just thumbing our noses at these required holidays for couples. Come on.
That's what makes it meaningful.
No, every
the
day.
The fact that
is
it's harder
meaningful.
To get a reservation that night. That's what makes it.
In Moose Jaw.
In Moose Jaw.
Okay, so here's the question. We're looking at the stats here, and I sent you guys some stats, that the number of singles in our congregations and in culture is dramatically rising. So let me give some stats for our listeners. If you go back to 1981, Caitlin, were you born in 1981?
No.
Okay. Well, good for you.
That's really a personal question.
I didn't,
there.
Yeah, I didn't know if I should actually answer.
It's a ballpark. It's not a specific date.
81.
I was not yet alive.
81. I was only 9 years old. Okay. And I'm old, so I thought it was a pretty safe question.
I can't believe I'm the oldest person on this podcast.
Yeah. So more and more Canadians live alone, and in 1981, 1.7 million Canadians lived alone. In 2021, 4.4 million Canadians live alone. So in 2016, one-person households became the predominant household type of 28% for the first time in Canada's history. Think about that. 28% of people are living in one, in single households, single resident households. And then you might think, well, I thought, well, maybe it's like the old aging population. Like it's maybe it's because like people, their spouse maybe passes away and they're still living in the house and whatnot. But I also found this stat, more than two thirds of people aged 25 to 29 were in a couple in 1981. And now that's only 39% in 2021. So the number of like emerging adults has like almost been cut in half, and they're single. So anyway, all that to say is like singleness is like on the rise, and there's all sorts of reasons for that. Mm-hmm. So churches, I mean, like, should we spend time emphasizing, or do we emphasize marriage and family too much, or what's your guys' take on that?
Oh, that's, I mean, you're right. It is a reality. And I can think of lots of reasons that our society and our culture are just in opposition to healthy relationships.
Right.
But it is a, I mean, singleness is so prevalent now that I think churches do need to be intentional about ministering to people who are single. And whereas, you know, back in 1981, when I was 11 years old, there would be, oh, what are we going to do about the one or two single people in our congregation?
What are we going to do?
Yeah. Well,
the problems you had in 1981.
I know. So, whereas now it's, you know, I mean, that has almost
gone from rare to common.
Yeah. It is quite common. And I know, I mean, at our church, we did a series on family and relationships a month or two ago. I wish Dan were here. He would remember since he preached it. Yeah. But he preached one Sunday on singleness and sort of laid out a biblical view of singleness. And that was, I mean, and that's not a sermon that you hear very often topic, but I think it is something that was appreciated and is much needed. And even for people who are married, to just to have an understanding of what the Bible says about singleness is pretty important.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for a church to do a series on marriage or on family is like pretty low hanging fruit. Like there'll be a lot of people like just, oh yeah, I want to listen to that. But all my single friends are like, I want to skip church for like 3 weeks while that thing's going on. I don't even want to show up. Like it's not even something like, and then to have a pastor who's married talk about singleness for them, they're like, can you get someone single talking about singleness? It's a bit of a challenge, but Kaylin, how about your generation, your friends, you know, a lot of single people out there?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, from my friend group, I would say it's like about half that are married compared to single. And I mean, for me, even myself, I would say I felt older getting married even at like 26, 27, which, you know, you tell that to some people and they think, whoa, that's still young. But then I'm thinking of some of the people I knew that were 19, 20 getting married. And my kids was thinking, whoa, that's young. But as my boss often would encourage me when I was in my single days, he said, don't worry, the average age for a woman now to get married is 31. So you still have tons of time. Not that encouraging. Don't say that to people. but so it is interesting. And I think... yeah, as you said, people just have different priorities now. Or I don't know if you said it yet.
We talked about it.
Earlier. Just different priorities and trying to, you know, establish different things in their education and careers. And yeah, I think honestly, just making it, I don't know, more of a season. I really loved my single season. I don't know. And I look back and I don't think I was like just thinking all the time about when I was going to get in a relationship. And I think that often it just is the battle to actually, there's just such a, there's a special, I don't know. It's a special time to be single and to just have, you know, your soul focus just to even be on building your relationship with the Lord and establishing that. And yeah, I think you're right. If I was in a church service and someone was preaching at me and they were married and talking about singleness, I would probably be like, Let's have somebody else.
What do you know?
About this. Yeah. Who's maybe in it with me?
It's
and
like
have
a
that
23-year-old children's pastor teaching a parenting class.
yeah, that is interesting.
right.
I might regret this, but the Catholic Church has lots of teaching on marriage, and that's all single guys, so it can go both ways.
Yeah,
well,
I guess,
there you
I
go.
Guess, yeah, it's true.
It's true.
Yeah, I think during COVID, like this is when it became just very poignant to me how much of the population was really affected by singleness. Because if you're the sole occupant of a house and you're forced into lockdown and you're not making any human contact, physical or, you know, and yes, sure, there's Zoom and yes, sure, there's phone. But I mean, we are embodied people and we actually need physical touch too. That's important. You know, so we had a really good friend of ours who was, you know, in her late 30s at the time, and during COVID had to drive from Edmonton to Saskatchewan to be with a family member in order to get a hug, like, because the restrictions were a little bit different and they could go with family. And so we just said, well, why don't you join our cohort? We could cohort with other people, but you join our cohort and you can be part of our family and just connect. And I just think of the number of, you know, we think about mental health crisis and all that, and the number of single people who didn't have that during COVID was going to be pretty devastating. So,
And I wonder how those numbers will shift. I don't know when, you know, some of those numbers and stats that you read off earlier were taken, but how that shifted since COVID because of that reality and how people went through that, you know.
Maybe they say because of COVID, they didn't. And then there was, But it seems to be trending. Like there seems to be a linear line somewhat. But yeah, so I mean, churches, do we just stop having Valentine's Day events?
Unless it's just like speed dating. I'm just kidding.
I guess you could do that.
That's not helping.
Would that have been helpful for you at 25?
No, I wouldn't. I would not have gone to that.
You would not have gone to that.
No.
Yeah.
I kissed dating goodbye, so, you know.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Let's not go there either.
Just all the promos say your music. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, there's still a place for it, obviously. I mean, you can't just, you know, there's an appropriate place for specific demographics and reaching certain needs within the church, I think, for married couples.
Yeah, I think, and I've been to, I mean, we've had events that have been very encouraging and edifying for couples. Also been to a few cringy ones as well. So there's, but you got to take some risks. You got to risk some
cringe.
You got
to have the right people planning it.
Yeah, that is
fromage-y,
that is true.
A little cheesy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. So, I mean, it's good, but I mean, does it have to be on Valentine's Day? I mean, couldn't you do it any other night? Does it have to be Valentine's Day? I mean,
okay, I'm going to be honest here. So I would prefer not.
Finally.
I
mean, you haven't been?
Because I would prefer, like, for a pastor, like, I don't want to go to work on Valentine's Day, right? Like, I want to go on an actual enjoyable date with my wife and not be at the office. So that's my take.
And maybe half the couples out there are feeling the same thing. It's like, I don't want to go to church tonight and do something. I'm going to go out. I want to go and do something else. And I don't want to feel this sense of responsibility to support the pastor because he's going to be depressed if not enough people show up in the room.
We're getting really honest.
We're getting really honest.
This is great.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that's something as I think about Valentine's Day, I think about my single friends out there and I think of, for a lot of people, it's wonderful, but for some people it's like, and not all single people are depressed on Valentine's Day either. They're contented in their singleness and, you know, this is where God has brought them and they're happy with that. But then there are others who are single, but don't want to be single. And I think Valentine's Day can be a bit of a tough day. Mm. Yeah. All right. Well, let's turn our attention to this week on the podcast. We will be hearing from Jody Cross. He's the lead pastor of South Shore Bible Church in Barrie, Ontario. And we're going to hear about his transition to the lead pastor role. He'd never been a youth lead pastor. He had a lot of other pastoral roles for many years. And so what's it like later in life to jump into the mantle of being a lead pastor and all the weight that it carries. And but we're also going to hear about the surprising ways that God's using a men's ministry to transform his church. There we go. We're specifically talking about, I don't know, a very specific demographic. God's been doing some pretty cool things through his men's ministry. So that's this week on the podcast, and I hope you both get a chance to listen to it and enjoy it. And
yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Jody's been like a mentor to me and a huge influence on my life, and really was there for me when I transitioned out of sort of secular work into ministry. And I got to say, I'm a little disappointed that he's gone over to the dark side, being a lead pastor after being a worship pastor. But
worship wars.
You know, he's still a good guy, so I think he'll probably survive that transition.
Yeah. Yeah, he's also got his own podcast. We're going to hear about that as well when we do the interview. Caitlin, Jeff, thanks for joining me here this morning.
Awesome. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks, guys.
Well, we are excited to have Jody Cross here on Church in the North. He's the lead pastor of South Shore Bible Church in Barrie, Ontario. Jody, welcome to Church in the North.
Rob, thanks so much for having me. I'm actually in the North, too. I'm, they call it Central Ontario, but like I feel like it's the North because this is a snow belt. So from one guy in the North to another, hey.
Yeah, good, eh? Well, Barrie's a bit of a dip south, but are you actually north of the 49th in Barrie?
I have no idea. I know where the 49th, maybe it cuts through my driveway. I'm not even sure. But,
okay.
You know.
I'll have to look it up afterwards.
It has been, when I moved here 22 years ago, it was like buy a house and buy a snowblower basically in the same day.
Yeah.
So well, if that
you're
means
I'm in the lake.
Yes, yes. We get lots of lake effect. And although this, you know, like everybody, this has been a bit of a weird season. So there's not very much snow now.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we got the warm out here, you got the warm out there as well?
Like, yeah. Whatever you guys cook up, you send over to us. We get it.
Okay.
Like 3 days later or something. Cool. So thanks.
Wow. Well, yeah, you've been in ministry for over 30 years. Like, sir, you're an old guy. Like me.
Well, old in age, young in heart.
Yeah. So we say. Like many of us, your journey into pastoral ministry, it's kind of, I don't know if there is a normal pathway, but it's not really linear. So you kind of got into it through the side door. So why don't we talk a little bit about that? Let's start back at the beginning. Talk about your call. Talk about how you got into ministry.
Yeah. So what you're saying is my journey was abnormal.
Yeah.
You're just being kind when you say non-linear.
Abnormal. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. I don't know what normal is though.
So. Yeah. I think you're right. Well, I got saved at 15 and there was a radical transformation in my life. I didn't grow up in a Christian home. So who I'd been and who I became in Christ was pretty drastically different. So I began my grade 11 year as someone new in Christ and brand new in Christ, not knowing a whole bunch of things, but there was a real zealousness and a passion in my life for the Lord, for gospel, for worship, for evangelism. And that's the grace of God for sure. Mm. And then I grew and then it was really, I think my story, my journey is really a testimony of the grace of God and the people he sent into my life to disciple me. Because I didn't grow up in a Christian family, I didn't have that, you know, at that point, 15 years of mom and dad taking me to Sunday school and
right.
church and reading the Bible. So I was starting new at that point. And so the Lord graciously sent me really, it was campus workers. So I was involved with what we call ISCF. I'm not sure if that's still a deal, but it's
yeah,
universities ministry at a high school level.
Seems like a very Ontario thing, but when I youth pastored in Ontario, it was big.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not even sure, you know, I'm not even sure if it exists anymore, if that still is cool in Ontario high schools. But I had a physics teacher who was a Christian fellowship leader, and he discipled me. And then in the university years, I was involved with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship and Power to Change. I was at Carleton for a couple of years, 3 years, and at Ottawa U for a couple of years. And so God sent, you know, leaders, campus ministry leaders to really disciple me. And so that was a really big part of laying the foundation for who I became and the path that God had me on. Mm-hmm. And I did have a heart to serve. I remember my first Christian leadership responsibility was playing guitar at 16 in my youth group at the church I was going to. And I was not a good guitar player, but probably better than anybody else in the room. So, you know, by default, I got it. But and then it involved with campus ministry had a real heart for evangelism and discipleship, particularly with Power to Change. And they were very intentional about those things. If you know anything about those ministries, they're very focused on what they do. And so then as part of that, I got involved with some mission trips. So backing up the story just a little bit, because of this is a whole other side tangent, but anybody who remembers who Keith Green was,
he died
in 1982. In 1984, as a university student, I ended up at a Keith Green Memorial concert. So I'm at this Keith Green Memorial concert, and I stand up and I make a decision that I'm going to fully surrender my life to Christ. And I think I had been living a fully surrendered life, but this was a God moment in my life where the Lord was challenging me to, you know, Romans chapter 12, to lay it all down again. And particularly as a 20-year-old, those are formative years when you're making your life decisions and you are saying, God, I'm serious. I'm serious about the rest of my life. And so I stood up. I actually had three non-Christian friends with me hanging out that night. And I'm not even sure what they thought of that. But so that was a really significant part in the call and the journey too, because I ended up, that was in February. By January of the next year, I ended up doing a discipleship training school at YWAM.
Okay.
And yeah, so here, I've got this campus ministry stuff going on. Now I'm doing a mission project with YWAM, doing a DTS. And it was when I came back from YWAM after having served in Costa Rica for 7 weeks on an outreach that God really put in my heart a desire to serve him full time. And I had not had the most compelling, let's just say, local church experience up to that point. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. And because I'd had frontline, what I felt was frontline evangelism and discipleship experience in these campus ministries, that's really where I wanted to be, on the front lines. So I have YWAM, and I've got these Power to Change, InterVarsity stuff going on. And so I come back and I finish my degree. I go to Teachers College and I say, Lord, use my life in some ministry capacity. And at one point I had contemplated joining staff with Power to Change.
Yeah.
But because my undergrad was in education and I had been to Costa Rica and learned Spanish, I think God's maybe going to use me, you know, in Latin America. I love Spanish people, Spanish speaking people. I love Latin America. Maybe God will send me to be a missionary. So I ended up going to Urbana
and was
waiting for sort of the green light. Like, this is the door, enter here, go, the call of God. And so the Lord really surprised me, because fast forward just a few months after the Urbana experience. Urbana, if people don't know, was a big InterVarsity missions conference, 19,000 people, the equivalent of kind of what Passion is these days.
Yeah.
And so what the Lord did, I graduated from Teachers College. I ended up, because I was going to a church for the last couple of years in Ottawa, in September of that year, August, September of that year, I had a chat with my lead pastor, and he invited me to join staff. The youth and young adult guy that they had hired left. There was an opening, and he invited me to join staff, which was a little, you know, interesting, because I'd never been to Bible school.
Right.
And
was the church?
What was that again?
What was the denomination of your church?
Oh, it was a Methodist church, Wesleyan Methodist church.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So I had not been to Bible school, and nor was this on my radar to work in the local church. You know, I'm heading sort of overseas somewhere. Anyway, so the Lord, which is kind of a theme of my life, you know, you have this trajectory and then God does something and changes your mind quickly, which is a beautiful thing. And so they opened up a position for me. They had a category in their, what's called the discipline, but it's kind of their rules and orders books. But they had a category called the lay assistant to the pastor, which was 30 hours a week. So you could be like Joe Blow off the street and still work for 30 hours in the church. And so I was supply teaching high school math 2 days a week, working at the church 3 days a week, and found myself on staff as a graduate from my undergrad. Wow. So that's really where it began.
Wow. So I'm just tracking this, and I'm like, you were in school for 4 years. You went on a YWAM trip. Yeah. Like, did you student loan this thing, or did you have a slush fund, or did you just work really hard during the summers? How did you get through all that?
Well, no, I didn't. I lived at home for some of those years, but hey, you got to remember, tuition in those years was $1,300.
So that's right. The good old days.
I was still the prototypic starving student and lived on, you know, 99 cent pizza, frozen pizzas from the grocery store. But the Lord provided.
Itchy Band and Pop-Tarts.
Yet I should just also say that I was at that church, Sunnyside, for 5 years, which was just an amazing, amazing phase of my life, because I'm really disoriented at this point, because I didn't expect to get there. And I'm looking around at this world called church ministry and thinking, what is this and where do I fit? Where do I belong? What are my gifts? How does this work?
Yeah.
And so, but they were so gracious. It was actually the church in Ottawa where George Beverly Shea, his father was pastor.
Okay. Yeah.
And you know, George Beverly Shea, if people don't know, was the soloist with Billy Graham for many years. Yeah. And George Beverly Shea, I think he lived till about 101 or something, something like that. So it was a great church, and they just loved me and they gave me lots of room. So I was there, started my credentialing process, ended up in those years, starting to do my MDiv from doing distance ed, and which I ended up, that's part of the story, I ended up going to Tyndale after that. But one interesting little anecdote is that when my dad was little in the north of Quebec in Val-d'Or, Rouyn-Noranda, he got really sick. And my grandmother, whose theology was maybe not exactly right on, but she loved God. She sort of did a Hannah deal with my dad, who was really sick. And she said, if you protect him and save his life, I'll make him a minister. You know, that doesn't sort of work that way, but there's biblical notions in there. And so my father actually did not, he survived and he lived till he was 74, but he didn't become a minister, and he had quite a journey in his own faith journey. But anyway, in my grandmother's later years, when she was in her 80s, she was suffering some dementia. I did say to her around the same time, I said, Grandma, God has made me a minister. So it was interesting that what she had pledged to the Lord in my dad's life, somehow God had seemingly had his hand on my life.
Yeah.
To, I believe, to bless her desires to dedicate both, you know, my dad and subsequently me to himself.
Wow. Wow. Those first years in ministry, did you have a good mentor in the church there? The senior pastor, was he?
Yeah, he was exemplary, and he ended up his last few years he spent in Winnipeg. And I actually only had, I had 2 years with him, but he and his wife really discipled us. They married us, dedicated our first child, preached at my ordination. So this guy was heavily invested. His name was Ray Erickson, and a faithful, faithful man. And then the next guy who was my lead for the next 3 years, I was 24, he was 25, and we,
oh wow,
I shudder. And we had another guy on staff who was 22. Wow. So the three pastors were average age, whatever that is, 24.9. So this was a university church with three guys in their mid 20s. And we had a lot of fun, and God was very faithful, and we saw a lot of amazing things happen.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, my first 5 years in ministry, I was a Christian for a few months before I went to Bible college. Went to Bible college for 2 years, got out. It sounds like I got out of jail. I got out and started working at a church and then going to school at the same time. And I had an extraordinary lead pastor, and his wife, same thing, adopted myself and my wife. So I'd been a Christian for 2 years, and I was a pastor. Mm-hmm. And I didn't grow up in the church, so I didn't know anything about how to run a youth group. I'd never been in a youth group. I had no idea. So those students, it was a great, some of the best years of ministry in my life, but those students were really like lab rats. I just was, I was experimenting because I had no idea what I was doing, but the Lord was gracious as well in their lives. Changing them.
It's a good thing you and I weren't in the same church in those years, because neither of us knew anything.
Yes. But we learned by trial and error in many ways, or watching other people. So let's fill the gap between South Shore and this first church that you're in. Tell us a bit about your journey then, from point A to point
B. So after the 5 years in Ottawa, we felt led of the Lord to move to Toronto, so I would finish my MDiv. So we did, ended moving to Newmarket, and did my MDiv full time for 2 years. Graduated there, and
where was that at?
In Toronto at Tyndale.
Tyndale, yeah.
And those were really great years, because we had we were in our first child and ended up having two more kids in those years, and served at a church and I was involved with worship ministry. And this is where, in those days, in fact, for 32 years, my main role was in worship ministry, yeah, worship leadership, worship pastor. And it was in those university years at that Sunnyside Church in Ottawa, and in this phase of my life, that I was doing all sorts of worship training, learning how to do it, leading it. And that's a whole other story in terms of what it was to be a worship pastor in the late 80s, early 90s.
When, oh, yeah, yeah. Well, know, we could get into that a little bit, because
it was a frontier, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Been there.
Learning to clap on 1 and 3 or 2 and 4 instead of 1 and 3. And what do you do with the organ? And should we have guitars and drums on the stage? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. So I, you know, you and I were chatting about this earlier on and before the podcast recorded, but you asked if I'd been involved in worship. So I did a short stint for a year and a half as a worship and small groups pastor. And it was in the middle of the worship wars, and it nearly killed me. Like, it was just so challenging to lead.
Yeah.
Was it challenging for you?
And, well, you know, that first church, as I said, how gracious they were. I mean, I'm sure if I could chronicle all the mistakes I made, it would fill a book. But I remember there was this one lady, her name was Mary Moffett. She was a sweet, sweet lady, probably in her late 70s or early 80s. And I was concerned, because this had been a relatively traditional church, piano and organ.
Yeah.
And here comes this acoustic guitar guy, and then there's a bass on the platform, and then there's a guy who parks his drums beside the organ. And this church is having to figure this all out. And I was trying to be sensitive to the seniors, of which there were a number in the church. And I went to Mary one day. She was a leader in the church. And I just said, Mary, what can I do to help you in your worship? And really what I was saying is, you know, how are people in your demographic receiving this? And she was just beautiful and profound. And she said, Jody, if I come to worship, meaning if I come with the intent to worship, I will worship. And that was the sum total of her response to me, you know. So you just keep doing what you're doing, and we will worship. And so there was so much freedom given, but those were exciting years. They were cutting edge years. They were, you know, we were singing songs like Refiner's Fire.
Shine, Jesus, Shine.
And,
Open the eyes,
I lift
of my
eyes
heart
up, you know, some of that early Brian Dirksen stuff.
And, okay. Yeah.
I mean, they were phenomenal years. And I had actually, with YWAM, had this profound experience with the Lord, with, you know, kind of two recycled hippies who had long hair and two acoustic guitars, and we would be singing and worshiping together. And the Lord met me with his presence and his power, you know. There was no big bands, just a couple acoustic guitars and lots of 20-year-olds that love Jesus. So I was really struck with how God's presence is life changing and how we draw near and enjoy him. But so from Newmarket anyway, did my MDiv, was working at a church, and then we got called to Newmarket, to Orangeville Baptist Church, which is now called Compass, which we had our fourth child. Do you know anything about Compass?
Compass, yeah. I think when I was out pastoring in Unionville, they hosted a conference, and I went and they had the Excalibur conferences, I think, with Dave Overholt. I think they used to host them there. So,
yeah.
So I'd gone there for a few times. Yeah.
And as I look back at the journey, as you said, this is nonlinear. And as you jump from Ottawa to, okay, let's go to Newmarket because there's a place to live and there's a church there. And because of that church, and I think people, as you think about your own stories, that God puts you in a place that feels odd, but that place is going to be significant because something is going to happen there. It's going to lead you to the next thing. And so from Orangeville, I met a guy who was planting a church out of Chicago.
Okay.
And I didn't know this guy. His name was Todd, and he heard of me and found me. And I had been recording some CDs, and got a hold of one of my CDs and said, I'm planting a church called Harvest Bible Chapel in Barrie, Ontario. It's like, what's Barrie? It wasn't really that far, but I didn't know much about Barrie.
So Harvest Bible Chapel, I don't think any of our listeners have heard of that. What is Harvest Bible Chapel?
Harvest Bible Chapel out of Chicago, yes. I served there for 10 years. So I ended up, Todd ended up finding me and said, hey, I'm going to plant this church. Do you want to come along for the ride? And we had good years at Orangeville, and our fourth child was born when we were there. So that's it. We have four kids. And
were you,
I'm still,
were you doing worship there? Is that what you're
doing? I was, yeah. Worship in small groups.
Okay.
But I'm still, you know, I'm still learning. Like at this point, it's about 10 years into my ministry, and I'm still learning, still growing, which I think I would still say I'm still learning, still growing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then made the jump. I had a number of, in those years, I had a number of opportunities. Like in 6 weeks, I had about 5 phone calls saying, want to do this, want to come and join us in there. And so I knew that God was stirring us up. So God was preparing us for a change. And so we ended up moving to Barrie and planting Harvest, which I was the associate pastor and the worship leader and was there on staff for 9 years.
Wow.
And so those were, you know, some wonderful years in so many ways. And we've actually lived in the house that we moved to 22 years ago when we were at Harvest. Although since then I've been in 2 other churches. So it's nonlinear again.
It's like a mission center for you.
It was a mission center. Yeah.
Yeah.
So from Harvest, we, did my doctorate ministry. So finished my MDiv, did a DMin at Gordon Conwell and writing on Christian leadership, particularly in the area of the pastor or the worship pastor as shepherd. That was my topic, my dissertation topic, looking at David. And, so out of that, we ended up moving to a church in Aurelia called First Baptist Church, which is now Cornerstone under Paul Carter, who has a ministry called Into the Word, and had 10 amazing years in Aurelia. But I stayed in the house because my wife was working out of the home teaching piano, and my kids were all finishing their junior high and senior high years here.
Yeah.
And so I said, I'll just commute up the highway. It wasn't very far. It was only 30 minutes.
Oh, that's a short Toronto commute.
That is a short, that's like going down the block in Toronto, I think, but
yeah,
it was up a nice highway drive for me. And it was very enjoyable for much of the time. And probably those were some of my most growing years personally and as a leader. Hmm. And that was from 2010 to 2020. And so about a year before that came to an end, there was a stirring in me feeling like, I think God's got something different. The church was healthy. I was enjoying it. And one of the things that I really loved about that chapter was that I was the leadership development pastor. And what that meant was I was overseeing the interns. And so we had 29 interns in 10 years.
Okay.
Different men and women, young men and women who spent summers with us or school year internships. And I absolutely loved that. And so much fruit, so many good times. But God was stirring us up and saying, I think there's something coming. And so I wasn't sure about what that was, and that led us to where I am now at South Shore.
So what was the date when you started at South Shore?
Thanksgiving 2020. There was this thing, I don't know if you remember it. It was this like thing we went through called COVID.
Yeah, it was right. I heard that. People were shuttered in their houses.
I don't know if you remember that thing. Yeah. Everybody has
so it their... wasn't a COVID move though, because God was stirring your heart well before that.
Yeah, no, it was. In fact, COVID was probably the worst time in the planet to do anything, particularly a church move.
And to start something new in the middle of COVID,
Well, yeah, and, you know, you could take new and like capitalize it and highlight it. Yeah, it was new to the nth degree.
Yeah, totally. So how did that call come about? Like, how did you end up at South Shore? I mean, you didn't just jump ship. There must have been some...
No.
Signs or some events happening in your life that kind of confirmed and affirmed that call?
Yeah, angel visitations and skywriting.
Oh, scrolls that land in your lap, bitter and sweet.
Alphabet soup that says South Shore. Well, you know, again, one of the beauties of getting old is that you do begin to be able to look back and have more years behind you that I can see now how God was orchestrating it. So some of the people that I had served with and served and led at Harvest ended up planting a new church in Barrie. So as this church got started back in 2012, I was cheering them on from a distance because I'm up the highway and my friends are there and there's a new work of God going on. And you know, I would consult with them and help them in various issues that they asked me for help with. And then as the second of their pastors at that point came to town, he just lived down the road from me. So I decided to call him up and pray for him and walk with him and become friends. And we established a really good relationship. So here we are doing ministry in different churches, and he's my friend. So that's going fine. And I'm doing my thing and he's doing his thing. I didn't know tons about them, but appreciated them from a distance. So then in July of 2019, we head down to the waterfront in Barrie. If anybody's been to Barrie, we have a nice beach and a bay, and it's kind of the most beautiful waterfront in central Ontario. So we're hanging out down there going for a walk. And he tells me out of the blue that he thinks God's calling him to go to Dubai. Hmm. And he unpacks that story about this call, and he and his wife are being challenged to basically leave Barrie, leave the church, and go and teach at a seminary there. And I'm just 100% thrilled for him, and can see, man, this is just like stirring your soul. I'm pumped. But actually, that wasn't the purpose of his conversation with me. He wasn't there to tell me about himself. He was there to say in the next breath, how about you? I think you should be the next pastor of South Shore. So I was pretty blindsided. It was not on my radar at all.
Yeah.
And so, you know, at this point I'm 31 years as an associate, as a worship pastor. And, so now he's putting this thing in front of me, the desire to preach and to lead a ministry. And it really was not on my radar. And I politely said, thank you. And wow, it's an honor to be asked, but no, thank you. Like, let's continue to talk about Dubai and how's it going to happen? You know, it's like, whatever, let's move on. And so I just dismissed it and really didn't think much of it. And then, so then in December, actually, so about 5 months later, he and his wife had my wife, Alex, and I over to their house. And it was a coffee time, but I knew what the coffee was going to be about. It was going to be a pitch. And they did a great job pitching it again. Mm. And, you know, we were sort of reluctant to even go because we thought, you know, don't want to waste their time and don't want to give them any hope. So
yeah,
listened again. And he talked about the church and what he thought God was going to do. And so politely again, we said, no, thanks. And the one interesting thing was we got to the car after hearing it. And by the way, I don't think we didn't have, you know, no up to the Lord, like, God, we will do this, but we won't do that. We'll go here, but we won't go there.
Right.
This is the period when we were being stirred and we were prepared to, you know, throw it all to the wind and say, God, wherever, whatever, we're ready to do it. So it wasn't like we were saying no to the Lord in this, but just didn't feel right. Didn't feel like this was what God wanted us. So we got to the car and my wife said to me, what do you think? And I said, it was intriguing. About 2 weeks later, I sit down with one of my mentors over coffee. And I said, Mark, this crazy thing is happening with this church. They're sort of knocking on my door and asking me to be part of their church as lead. And the first words out of his mouth was, he said, Jody, if something sounds intriguing, follow it and see where the Holy Spirit will lead. Mm. So he uses the same word. I like, okay. So that's December. And then February, the chairman of the board calls me to go for coffee.
Yeah.
Yet again. So this is the third time now. And he sits down and he pitches it and he gives me the reasons why he thinks that I'm the guy that should go. And I'm gonna sound like Thomas here, but or Moses or some reluctant prophet. And I gave him about five reasons why I wasn't the guy for the job. And I actually said, but I have two guys that I know who I think would really be great candidates. So I told him no for the third time. And that really should have been the end of the story. So fast forward to June. So now we're almost a year later and I have my annual review at the church in Orillia at Cornerstone. And at the end of my review, which was a good review, I wasn't getting fired or anything. They were happy and I was happy. But I just said to our lead pastor, Paul, I said, I think God's stirring something in me that I would really like you to pray with me about and discern with me about. Mm. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it looks like, but I think the Lord's moving me on. And I went home from that meeting and that was really a turn of a corner. So I called up the lead pastor at South Shore and I said, I don't think I've really given you a fair hearing on what exactly it is that you're looking for and what the vision of the church is. So this thing just happened. I told my lead pastor that I'm in process of something. Why don't I get together with you and why don't you talk to me? So a couple of the guys from the church came and as they sat in my living room with my wife and I, they talked about the church and the vision and what it was that they were looking for. And as they laid out the role and the kind of heart and qualifications and focus of ministry that they were looking for, it had my name all over it. And it wasn't that they had pitched that for me, but what they felt the church needed and where the the Lord wanted the church to go had been written in absence of me, but they found that I was the guy they thought could help that. Mm-hmm. And so after that, then I said, let's keep walking. And the search committee interviewed me. And on July 26th of 2020, 1 year to the date of that big walk of the waterfront, we said yes. Mm-hmm. And I was candidating, and the vote went through. And so I started on in the Thanksgiving of 2020 and have been there for 3.5 years.
Okay. Wow. So you're candidating at a time where people are wearing masks and
we did outdoor stuff. So it was maskless, and my living room was fine. So there was no masks in my living room.
Yeah, at least it was a summertime too. So things had probably opened up a little bit during that time, but maybe not in your area. Depends on which province you're in. So so I don't know. This is a church plant that was by then, what, 8 years old, 10 years old?
Yeah, it was about 8 years old. Yeah. So it had two pastors. The first guy there for 4 years, name was Jason. Yeah. He moved back to the States.
Yeah.
And Adam moved to Dubai. So I got there at the 8 year mark in COVID.
Yeah.
And so it was, you know, it was not a fully functioning, all hands on deck, all eight cylinders church. It was like every church, it was trying to figure things out and dealing with all of the issues of those who had various positions. And
were you guys a pop-up church, or were you in a rented space?
We are in rented space. That was our own full rental. So we weren't doing setup and tear down.
Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, that's a couple of leaders in 10 years in a church plant. So there's a lot of new happening there. And then you hit a pandemic and it's new again.
New.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk a little bit about your role at the church then. You're preaching and you're leading, and is there a staff team?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a small church. We're now at about 160 people.
Yeah.
But when I got there, it was functionally about 70 people.
Wow.
And so I was the only staff member. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that attracted me to the church was the polity of a plurality of eldership. So I wasn't going to be the guy that had to do all the shepherding,
make
all the decisions. The elders and I were co-shepherding together, co-pastoring, as it were.
Yeah.
And so that was very attractive to me. And as you just said a second ago, they wanted me both to preach and to lead worship, not simultaneously all the time, but to have a balance. And so functionally, where that has shaken out to is I preach 2 out of 3 weeks, I lead worship 1 out of 3.
Yeah.
And so that's just a beautiful thing that the Lord was gracious to allow me to continue to use my gifting in the area of worship. Mm. And also then to hone this new skill of communicating the gospel and preaching.
Yeah.
And so, that's my role as lead pastor. And, but now we have an associate who's, on staff with us, just a great guy. His name is Peter. Mm. And, we have an admin and stuff. So, and just a great church to lead.
Yeah. So how did the pandemic affect that church? I mean, did they experience the great shuffle of saints that a number of other churches experienced, or, a lot of,
we had a shuffling out.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of shuffling in, in those days. Because I think people were more reticent to come in, but people who had differing opinions, I think, were quick to leave and to find something they were more comfortable with in terms of the church's response to government authorities and that type of thing. So, we did lose quite a few people, and there was those challenging conversations in those years, and figuring out how to do exits graciously and honestly and truthfully. And so there was some of that stuff. So that was really, week two.
Okay.
Week one is preach your first message. And week two is let's deal with the fallout from COVID, and which functionally was that fall and that winter and that spring of 20 and 21. So there was a lot of challenges at Cornerstone up in Aurelia. I had already been through 6 or 7 months of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
With lockdowns and all that stuff. So we had done the pre-recorded preaching and worship leading and all of that stuff. And, so pivoting, as that word is triggering to people, I like to call it flexing, but pivoting pivoting is such a trigger word. Anyway, all that to say, flexing was fine. I'm a flex kind of guy. So that didn't bother me or stress me out, but The Lord, since when we got to 2021, because we were allowed to meet outside and we are in a commercial industrial area, Sundays there's nobody around and we have this massive parking lot. So we just did lawn chair church for 21 weeks. Hmm. And so we didn't have to wear masks and we could have as many people as we could fill in that place. So
yeah, that's great. Except in the middle of winter, I guess you can't really pull it off.
Well, we stopped at Thanksgiving of 2021, not because it had rained. So the Lord actually did this miracle that we were outside on Sundays without rain for 21 weeks, which statistically, I'm not sure the odds of that, but we see it as miraculous. But we just went inside because it started to get cold in Ontario. So we had to go back inside. Yeah. But since then, really the last 2 years, the Lord has been very gracious and his favor has been upon us. The church retained its health, its stride, and has grown in ways that probably like many churches, the church looks different. Its identity is different. Its feel is different just because the Lord has brought new people and is doing new work.
Well, so, let's talk about that. Let's talk about one of the things that I know that God is doing in your church, and that's with your men's ministry. So let's get right into that. Tell us about what God has been doing in the lives of the men in your church and maybe how that got started.
Mm-hmm. The previous pastor had done a ministry called Frontline for men, specifically investing in them, probably 8 or 9 men or something. And I had been part of that I think I was part of the last session just before he left and I took over. And so that was probably a year and a half or 2 years. Well, it was 2 years since we did anything. So COVID happened, that ministry ended. And as I'm just kind of getting my feet on the ground and thinking, okay, good. We can start launching some of these ministries again, starting them up and dusting them off. I said, we really haven't done much to invest in the lives of men. We're keeping the lights on, but we need to spend some time encouraging, strengthening, discipling men. So in November of 2022, as we were praying about it, the Lord gave us this concept, this word pursuit. And so launched a discipleship ministry for men called Pursuit. And that comes out of 2 Timothy 2:22, which is just a fantastic verse. It says, so flee youthful passions, pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. And that's where the idea of pursuing is, pursuing Christ and pursuing his will for our lives. So I started something. I created a ministry that ended up to be in the first chapter, 16 weeks long, reading 2 books, memorizing a bunch of scripture, being an accountability group. So we set the bar really, really high and called the men of the church to come to this. And I think we had 25 or 26 guys.
Wow. That's a large percentage for your church.
It was a large percentage of our church. Yeah. And I didn't promise, you know, any frills. I just said, come and jump in, come to boot camp. And so many men just said, I need this. I've never done anything like this. God wants me to be here. Or some people said, I don't want to be here, but I know I need to be here. And this really was, it wasn't because I had dreamed up the best program. I really do believe it was a sovereign work of God that was tapping people and grabbing them and compelling them to get serious about their walk with the Lord. And again, this is coming out of COVID. So there's isolation in the background and there's maybe staleness and stagnancy. And God was gracious just to remind this group of men that come out of isolation, come out of your stagnancy, come and step up. And so we had a wonderful winter of 2023, and then started another session in the fall of 2023, and saw an extra number of guys come. So really what it was, I believe it was culture shaping, culture creating, culture defining for the hearts of these men that were getting serious about the word, getting serious about their pursuit of Christ, getting serious about sin, about honesty, about transparency, about confession, about accountability groups, and about leading well and loving well in their homes and leading in their church. And so that's really ongoing now. And it's wonderful to sow the seeds and then to watch a few months later what God is doing in the lives of men and all of the spinoffs of that and the fruit of that. And so it's very exciting, and we're not finished yet. My vision for Pursuit is it'll be four levels of growth and discipleship. The first one being spiritual disciplines, your walk with the Lord, spiritual leadership level two, mm-hmm. which is a man's role in the home, in the church, in the workplace. Mm. Third level will be evangelism and understanding doctrine. And a fourth level will be like leadership specific training for eldership and small group leadership and that mm. type of thing. So mm. that's where we see it going.
Yeah.
And it's ongoing as I speak.
Yeah. So how is it bearing fruit? I mean, in the lives of the men, in the mm. way it affects your church overall.
Yeah. So relationships, first of all, mm. guys are actually in relationship with one another and hungry for accountability, hungry for friendship with other guys. Mm-hmm. There was some young guys in their 20s that decided to do a 7 o'clock Bible study after pursuit was over. They just bonded together and they said, we need to do that. There's some guys that are doing accountability for purity issues.
Yeah.
There's other guys who are doing one-on-one accountability for purity. There's some guys who said, our physical health is not strong. We haven't been self-controlled and self-disciplined. So there's a bunch of guys that signed up for a gym membership.
Okay.
And they're keeping each other accountable for that.
Yeah.
There's groups that are on WhatsApp praying for each other. And some of these guys now, in terms of the fruit, are stepping up into eldership.
Yeah.
And they've just risen up. And so I think the men, there's a new sense of being who God called them to be, humbly and pursuing Christ, but also pursuing God's will for their lives. And those are the kind of things we're seeing in the early months.
Okay. Well, I think the question top of mind is, well, why men? I mean, why do you think men's ministry matters? Well, why is that important to you and to the church?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we do a search in the New Testament of what it says about men, and there's mm-hmm. lots of calls and lots of challenges for men to be godly. I mean, everybody to be godly for sure.
Yeah.
But the New Testament speaks to men, and I think of passages like Ephesians 5 and then into Ephesians 6, where God calls the man to a high standard of Christ-like love and leadership, and to shepherd his home, shepherd his children, to love and lead and serve his wife. So yeah. lots of biblical injunctions and commands. And I think that's easy for men to hide. It's easy for men to be hiding in their work, mm-hmm. Letting mom, wife, their wives take the lead in the homes or in the church, and they just kind of come. And it's been my experience that a lot of men carry a lot of shame.
Yeah.
Struggle with a lot of sin, particularly in the issues of purity. And those things can be like bungee cords that hold you back from following Christ fully and being all that God wants us to be and to do. And yeah. so we wanted to take seriously the call as leaders to come alongside these men and to love them and to challenge them, to teach them and to support them in being honest about where they struggle. And to give them this high bar, you know, I think it's Titus chapter 2 says that the grace of God has appeared, teaching us to say no to ungodliness and to say yes to righteousness. And so we together as men, we're saying, hey, we want to say no to ungodliness and to things that are keeping us from serving the Lord and being who he made us to be, and say yes to godliness and to righteousness. And let's do that together and let's help each other so that in our homes, we can love well and lead well. In our church, we can be effective for the kingdom. And in our workplaces, that our lights can shine brightly. So those are some things. And we have so many wonderful ladies in our church who we have a great ministry to women called T2, Titus 2, older women investing in younger women. And the leadership, we're encouraging our women. And there's women's conferences. And the women actually had a conference called Flourish that they were equipping and training and doing Bible studies. So ladies do that well, naturally anyway.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so that was really a big part of the church, but the aspect of that stuff for guys just wasn't happening. And so this was really filling a vacuum. And so we've got men and women who are being trained and discipled, and it's pretty exciting to see. Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, my experience, and I think I read the stats on it, but most middle-aged men don't have friends. Like they're very alone. So I think of like Bowling for Columbine and how more and more people culturally are moving away from community and friendship and whatnot. But for men in particular, it's even worse. So, I mean, I try and encourage young men to say to them, listen, you need to start investing in deep relationships now. Mm-hmm. Because by the time you get to be my age, it gets harder and harder to do. And I think if we are not proactive in establishing within our churches some way to get men into ministry or get men into community, they're not going to just do it naturally. It's not their natural inclination.
No, no. And, you know, one of the fruits of COVID that I did was because there was isolation, I had some guys that I had known for years. And so I said to them, hey, let's talk and pray every 2 weeks. So one guy's in Phoenix, Arizona, one guy's in Ottawa, and one guy's in Orillia.
Yeah.
And these are buddies that I'd had from years gone by. And so even this morning, I was on a 1 hour walk and prayer time with my friend in Phoenix. And those relationships in that level, doing exactly what you're saying, friendship, asking the hard questions, praying in tears, hearing each other's struggles and burdens and celebrating each other's successes and joys and just talking about what God is doing. That stuff is still persistent. And so those are the kind of things that we are encouraging. When you get men together, friendships form around Christ and around the Word and around a pursuit of Him. And that stuff bears fruit in lots of ways. And I think as a man's heart and relationship with Christ and health grows, the local church is going to become healthier in so many ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so we're actually in a preaching series right now called Purposeful Church. We're preaching for 9 weeks through our core values. And as people get a sense of their own personal identity in Christ and then understand that the identity of the local church is to be a God's word honoring and Christ exalting, worshiping, praying, united people with people who are strong in their faith individually, the church is going to have strength. And so I think it's one of the ways that the Lord is building some concrete and rebar into the foundation of the church, because anything that gets built on the foundation needs to have a strong base. So strong families, strong women, strong men, strong kids. And, you know, we're not a perfect church, but we're really seeing that the Lord is doing a deep and significant work.
Yeah. Wow. That's great. I should make a correction. I think I said Bowling for Columbine, but what I meant was Bowling Alone by Robert Putman. They're very, very different things.
Bowling. Yeah. Yeah. Bowling Alone doesn't sound very fun to begin with.
No, no.
Triathlons. Okay. That's an alone sport, but not bowling.
You need to
say who's got the better score for.
That's like ping pong. You need a ping and a pong. You can't just do it by yourself.
That's right.
So, you know, some people might say, you know, they're a little bit concerned that this push towards men's ministry in the church might be maybe a little bit misogynistic, or, you know, if people have seen heard the rise and fall of Mars Hill, whatnot, they're concerned that, you know, that it's kind of leaning into that swagger and that posture of misogyny. How would you respond to that for your church?
Mm-hmm.
Are you ignoring the women? Obviously you said you've got a women's ministry that's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, no. And, we're not ignoring the women, and we love them and honor them. And the testimonies that I hear from the women, both who are single, and the wives of the men in our church, are that they're loving what God is doing in the lives of the men in the church and how the men are leading and loving and serving. And there's a sense of, they feel protected. So rather than feeling dominated or neglected or misused.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, depending on what Bible you're reading, again, as I said earlier, this call in Ephesians chapter 5 is for men to be Christ-like. So
yeah,
if men's discipleship is proper, it's not rah-rah and boisterous and loud, but it's acting like men, do everything in love. It's living and loving like Christ loved, being transformed by Him from the inside out.
Yeah.
That will result in women being honored and loved and cherished and protected and served. And so That's the angle we come at it from, a place of humility and servanthood, but also bold and courageous leadership as well.
Yeah.
You know, and I think men do women a far greater disservice by shrinking back and by not being courageous and flirting with sin and not being serious about Christ in their walk. That's far more of a disservice, that it's neglect. So, I hope that it'll bear out that, that the women in our church will feel very honored and cherished and loved. And I think they do.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's a push in our culture to blend the distinctions between men and women. And I mean, just for our listeners who are listening in, I mean, theologically, Jody, you and I do have different theological perspectives. Like you are more of are on a complementarian side. I'm more on an egalitarian side. And some of our listeners are on either side of that in this matter. But as an egalitarian, I'm like, you still have to invest in the men in your church. Like there's a distinction. They're uniquely designed in either theological position. And so I know in our church, when I planted Crosspoint in 2010, one of the first things we did was we said, we got to focus on the men, get the men is what we had heard as a mantra in our church planting conferences. Because, I mean, the research demonstrates, like, if men are leading in taking their family to church, for example, there's a much higher percentage chance that the children will follow than if the women is. And that's not to in any way to minimize the role of the mothers in the church, but it's statistically true. Like men, there is something to that father role in leading the family that's really significant and important. And so for us, we said, we have to prioritize, how do we disciple men? How do we grow men? That's really, really important. And that's not at the expense of women, because we also did the same for women in the church, but men don't do it naturally. And so we felt like we had to put the foot on the gas with a lead brick sometimes to get men out. In our ministry. So, is that fair to talk about, you know, the different theological perspectives?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it is. And, you know, biblically, just read your Bible. As you said, God calls men to be who they're created to be as men, and God calls women to be who they're created to be as women. And we need to honor those differences and teach and train and disciple and love and release people into their areas of gifting, because, you know, the body of Christ is a body. And if the body is not functioning in its gifting, not stepping up in their roles, then the body's going to be weak.
Yeah.
And the home is going to be weak. And for too long, the church has been weak, I think, because of many reasons. But one of the reasons is that men have not been who they're called to be as godly leaders.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fantastic. Hey, let's change gears a little bit. You were playing guitar for a lot of years in your church before, and now you're stepping into a preaching role. Like your role has changed a lot. You know, you said you're doing like 3 out of 4 weeks preaching. What's that been like for you?
Yeah, that was a big learning curve for sure. So I have a gift of teaching, and I've done a lot of teaching. I'm teacher by training, but teacher by spiritual gifting.
Well, you teach in seminary too, don't you? And Bible college?
Yeah. So with worship consulting and a lot of worship training, I've done a number of those things over years.
Yeah.
So, you know, standing up and communicating truth was not a problem for me, not an issue for me. It's a joy. I love teaching. But if I'd preached once a year over the last 10 years prior to coming to South Shore, it probably would have been a stretch. So that was probably it. So I didn't get a lot of pulpit time, mostly because I was doing guitar worship leading time.
Right.
That was my calling and my role. So when part of this was the reluctance of, hey, this is quite a role change. So this is one of the reasons that I said no, because my worship leading gift was so strong and embedded in my heart. And there wasn't that necessary ambition or pull to preach, that compulsion. So I thought, I don't think so. But again, in that year, processing, praying, discerning, hearing from the Lord, that God changed that. And so I really did step up into a brand new role. And I said a few minutes ago that this role was new. So it was new in COVID. It was a new church in a new church plant in a new role. Yeah. I liken it to being a hockey player to him and playing goalie for 30 years. And then you get called over to the bench and the coach says, take off the goalie pads. Here's a stick. Go play center. And so you go, oh, okay, that's a puck. Yeah, I know the puck ice. I know the ice skates. I know the skates, but I'm on a different part of the rink and the job is different now.
Yeah.
So it you know, was going from a second cheerleader to a first cheerleader. And then in the middle of COVID. So there was a lot of interesting and new things to juggle. And I think in the preaching role, what was really new was not opening my mouth and communicating truth, but the discipline of study and of writing a manuscript and of planning series and of outlining texts. And all of that was a brand new discipline. And I was warned, and I'm thankful it was warned. So a couple of things about this. This is a new thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You've never done this before. And the weight is different. The weight of being a lead is very different.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anybody who's done what I've done and probably, I don't know, I'm sure there's some guys who've started out in worship ministry who've taken lead roles. I'm sure there's a number, but perhaps not 30 years into it. And you really can't describe the weight. You can talk about it, but you can't describe it until you're in the chair. And you know about that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a set, different set of callings in terms of responsibilities, different set of weight, different set of pressure responsibilities. And then add COVID as an overlayer of all that stuff. Yeah. And so the Lord's been really helpful and gracious and faithful to me in that journey. And it still continues to evolve in terms of my role. And as I'm settling into the preaching role, I realize what an honor it is to preach the unsearchable riches of Christ and to exposit scripture and to help people understand it and to love it, to learn it and to live it. And, you know, so I did remember talking to a guy who was a prof at Heritage Bible College. And he said to me once in a conversation I was having, he said, guys in their 50s, the temptation is for them to coast, like just take it easy and you know, kind of put it in neutral and coast. And you know, I didn't seek to be like a skydiving, you know, thrill seeker, but I decided I don't want that to be true of me. I don't want to coast. I don't want to settle. I don't want to settle in a chaplaincy role that I can just kind of placate people. And, you know, Lord, like till my dying breath, my life is yours. And wherever it is that you send me, here I am. Mm-hmm. So this, you know, the Lord took me up my word and really threw me out of my comfort zone and threw me into the new zone. And you know, the good thing about that is that it breeds this massive amount of dependency on him and reliance. And with Paul, you say he was sufficient for these things. And I think everybody who preaches, regardless of how long they've been doing it or what their gifting is, they say, you know, who is sufficient for these things? Because you're communicating the very words of God, the very heart of God to the people of God, this huge responsibility to shepherd the flock.
Yeah.
And it's an honor and a privilege and a joy. And I'm enjoying it. And I know God's changing me and has been faithful to help me and to help our church in the middle of all of it. Mm.
Well, that mantle is heavy in the lead role, I think. Unlike being an associate or any other role in the church, I think you're right. You can't really describe it until you've worn it. What it's like. I mean, I was the senior associate at Beulah, which is a big mega church, right? And then went and planted Crosspoint. And you know, the I think the amount of responsibility I had at Beulah was significantly more than say at Crosspoint. But the weight of being the lead pastor and the church planter of Crosspoint, just man, it's almost immediate. It's like you're the one wearing this. And so learning to share that load with the Lord and helping him to shoulder that burden is a like a lifelong journey for a lead pastor.
Mm-hmm. And leaning into the guys that I work with, the elders, it really is it's a blessing. And I've been on lots of church boards and boards over the 80s, 90s, 2000s have looked different, from management boards to, you know, once a month meetings to ratify different decisions. But this is guys in this particular polity that we're in that are, their hands are in the dirt. Mm-hmm. They're in the trenches in people's lives and shepherding and marriage issues, in and serving in various capacities. So in a sense, you know, I'm very much not alone, and I'm not doing this by myself. And I'm very thankful for each of these guys.
Are you still teaching right now? At Heritage or at
No, I'm not. The last thing that I was doing some worship teaching in Albania.
Okay.
Did a number of trips over there to teach worship, and did I've been doing some Zoom teaching for them, but not at Heritage. Mm. Mm. And actually, that's the other thing. Discretionary time as a second chair leader to do itinerant ministry is a little more plentiful than being a lead.
Yeah.
So I haven't had quite the liberty to do some of that other stuff as I did prior to being here. But I still do worship consulting and worship training, but not at Heritage.
Yeah, you got to say no to a lot more things because you're needed.
Yeah. It's job like one is job one. Yeah.
It's like a restaurant. You can't ever leave it. It's just, it's there all the time. However, you also are hosting a podcast in your spare time. So let me talk about that for a bit. How long you've been hosting the podcast? Tell us the name of your podcast. How long has it been going on and what's it all about? I'm interested in knowing.
Yeah. So it's Gospel Coalition, TGC Canada, and that's called Worship God. So it's a podcast for worship leaders and those who are involved in worship ministry. We've been doing this, well, we're 60 episodes in. So, and I think that's, probably two years or so.
Yeah.
And I started out with co-host Rob Brockman in Orillia and a guy named Pat Sibel in Vancouver. He was at most recently at Midtown Church.
Yeah.
Two great guys. And Pat's a songwriter, worship ministry veteran. Like me, he was a worship leader, worship pastor, was a senior pastor for a while in a church plant. Now is doing worship consulting. And Rob is an associate pastor of worship and missions. Hmm. Up in Aurelia. So we had fun, three of us doing what we did. And we're about 60 episodes in. We were recording with a guy yesterday on a topic called overrealized eschatology.
Oh.
One of the PhD guys from Southern. It's like, what is that? Basically it means we're not in heaven yet. And how does that affect our worship and our singing and our song lyrics?
Yeah.
He wrote his PhD thesis on that. And
okay.
We talk about those kind of things. We interview guests and, also recorded one recently, just talked about evaluating criticism and how you deal with critique, how you evaluate it, the sources and what you do with it. So we try to be practical. We've covered a whole bunch of different topics, had Paul Balazs on, we've had, Brian Dirksen on. We've had Mark Buchanan. Some of your listeners will know Mark.
And, yeah, yeah.
And so people who are musical or who think deeply about things. Mark Buchanan talked about David and David as a worshiper. So sometimes we have guests. Sometimes it's just us. But yeah, we've been doing that and really enjoy it and hope that we can encourage people to have Christ honoring, congregation edifying worship.
Yeah. So you said it's TGC. So how did it get started then? Did they come to you or you came to them or how did you get it off the ground? What's the vision behind that?
TGC Canada, the director, his name is Wyatt Graham, and Pat Sibel was on their national board. Mm-hmm. And it was Wyatt who I think dreamed up the idea with Pat, and Pat said yes. And then Rob and I came in as co-hosts with him. Pat's now doing his worship consulting thing. So Rob and I are taking it over.
Okay.
And so that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah. So is it just the two of you then? Do you have a third guest host you bring in every once in a while?
Yeah. Pat's sort of the guest host emeritus.
Okay.
And we bring him out of retirement every once in a while.
Yeah.
And Johnny Markin, I don't know if you know who Johnny Markin is. He's I think a Cloverdale Baptist.
Okay. Yeah. You were mentioning that. Yeah.
DC.
Yeah.
So he's been on a few times. So we've got some friends of the ministry who are kind of cousins and are sometimes hosts. But yeah, so it looks mostly like Rob and I at this point. Sometimes these guest guys, but. Mm.
Okay. So the name of your podcast and where can people get it?
Worship God on all the platforms.
Okay.
TGC everywhere. Canada, Worship God, pretty simple.
RSS feed.
Yes, we are an audio podcast at this point. Actually, we started the first few we did video, but we're just audio at this point.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Wow.
And
go ahead.
Yeah, and I just appreciate your co-host Jeff Dresser and I guess this is really why you and I got connected because Jeff and I were friends from our Ottawa days as he was processing his own call And has he been a guest? Has he been on the other side of the mic on this side?
He hasn't yet. No, we've only had outside guests. I think we'll probably do that, like, eventually. We just didn't want to interview ourselves yet. But I know he would have a lot to say about the worship. Actually, he's just publishing an article about it right now. That's I read the first draft, and I can't wait till it comes out.
I had the privilege of walking with him as an engineer and him wrestling through his own calling. Mm-hmm. And so I know Jeff's got a great story and his family. So so thank you for what you're doing to encourage leaders and to take stories of people in the trenches. So thank you, Rob, for doing that.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's been great having you. I wonder if as we close, you could just give a final word of encouragement to our listeners from one, mm-hmm. one pastor's heart to another.
Yeah. Well, leadership is a privilege, and God is gracious to call us into that. So wherever it is that people are listening and wherever they're serving today, just know you have an audience of one. And none of us feel like we are sufficient. None of us feel like we're competent in of ourselves. And the Lord has a wonderful way of reminding us to stay humble and to stay dependent, very much aware of our need, but also of his sufficiency. And I love the scripture in 2 Timothy 2, chapter 1, or chapter 2, verse 1. It says, be strong in the grace in Christ Jesus. And there's lots of ways that leaders get beat up and hammered and discouraged. But I was just reflecting even this morning that there is strength and grace in the Lord. And we believe in the power of prayer and the enabling grace of God and in the ministry of the Holy Spirit to do what he's called us to do. And at the end of the day, we plant. And we water, but God brings the growth. So
yeah.
As you trust in the Lord, brothers and sisters, as you're listening, allow God's grace to carry you today. Mm.
Good word. Jody Cross, thanks for joining us on Church in the North. Hope to have you back again sometime.
Thanks, Rob. Really appreciate it. It's good chatting with you too.
Yeah. See you later.
You've been listening to the Church in the North podcast, a production of Briarcrest College and Seminary. For more information about the podcast, visit churchinthenorth.ca. To learn more about Briarcrest, visit briarcrest.ca. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you heard today, please share this episode with other ministry leaders.